This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR at 8:55 a.m. on the dial. It's just me, Hannah, in the studio today. Sadly, Rob and Ed are having their well-deserved break, so it's just me by myself in the studio today. It's going to be a beautiful day here in Nam. It's going to be a top of 23, and it might rain in the evening, but maybe not. It's going to be sunshine in the morning. So, chit-chat with myself. What did I do this weekend? I have a cold, but that's okay. Saw the sunshine this morning. It was really beautiful driving in. Anyway, on the show today, first up, we're going to be hearing a segment of yesterday's Earth Matters show. We'll be hearing from Rosaline Parker. She is a Pacifica advocate and cultural consultant based in Sydney. Her work includes powering young Pacific leaders in engaging in meaningful advocacy, as well as climate justice initiatives in Tuvalu and Kiribati. And then we're going to be hearing a speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally from Julie Webb Pullman. She is a war crimes investigator and journalist who worked in Gaza from 2011 to 2020. And then after that, we're going to be hearing from Lionel Fogarty from the 3rd of September. He is a poet and activist based in Mianjin, and he will be reading some poetry on 3CR's Bunjil Fire with Robbie Thorpe. After that, we're going to be hearing another speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally. We'll be hearing from Renata, a progressive unionist who has worked in occupational health and safety for over 30 years, and she has family ties in Palestine. And she speaks on the historical struggle unfolding in Italy and their protests for Palestine. And then lastly, we're going to be hearing a segment from A Friday Rave, and Mercedes will be talking about the age restriction laws coming in December, the legal framework to ban social media for under 16-year-olds, and the dangers of third-party verification. But first up, here's the headlines.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty, say you're gonna. Right down to the real nitty-gritty.
These are the news headlines for Monday, the 29th of September, 2025. The Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service has dubbed the City of Melbourne's council program to deploy private security guards onto the CBD streets as, quote, inherently racist, given the disproportionate numbers of Aboriginal people sleeping rough, end quote, as well as the move on directions and infringement within the program, quote, akin to criminalizing poverty, end quote. The program was initially announced back in June as a part of the council's 25 to 2026 budget, with over $2 million going towards hiring firm Crownland security and more than 100 CCTV cameras added into the network. Photos of Crownland security employees walking alongside Lord Mayor Nicholas Rees show the inclusion of the thin blue line symbol associated with white supremacy. Going further back, Lord Mayor Nicholas Rees requested the City of Melbourne to investigate the use of facial recognition and AI and to, quote, enhance the effectiveness of Safe City Camera Program, end quote, in a May meeting of the Future Melbourne Committee. The Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service called the use of this technology as, quote, lacking any evidence for base of its impact on community safety, end quote. And such will, quote, have disastrous consequences for the misidentification and further criminalization of innocent people, end quote. Facial recognition technology is being used in combination with security cameras has been, in contrast, well documented in its disproportionate impacts on people of colour and exacerbating racial profiling. A separate statement by Homeless Persons Union of Victoria, a grassroots organisation consisting of members who have been or are currently homeless, declares that homeless people have not been consulted despite the plan's aim to target begging, drinking in public, and existing in public spaces. The union added in petition against the program that it, quote, violates fundamental human rights and lacks legal authority, end quote. The City of Melbourne's council further Future Melbourne Committee will unveil its draft Safe City Camera Program policy at a meeting on the Tuesday, the 7th of October. Listeners can register to attend the meeting and make a submission about its agenda by searching Future Melbourne Committee 7 October 2025 on the City of Melbourne's website at melbourne.vig.gov.au. Also in news this week, a new national report card released last week painted a stark picture of renting in Australia. 2 years after National Cabinet pledged in a quote-unquote better deal for renters, millions of Australians remain vulnerable to rent hikes, arbitrary evictions and unsafe homes. The report developed by the National Association of Renters Organisations and National Shelter highlights how a person's rights as a renter still largely depends on where they live. For one third of Australians who rent, this is leaving too many without basic protections. John Engler, CEO of Shelter New South Wales and spokesperson for National Shelter, said, quote, the rental experience in Australia shouldn't differ depending on what part of the Murray or Tweed you are renting on. The experience of rentings should be consistent across all states and territories, especially as Australia's renting population increases, end quote. The report card calls on the federal government to lead the change, ensuring that all states and territories implement reforms promised under the Better Deal for Renters, alongside stronger accountability and funding for renter advocacy. Leo Patterson-Ross, CEO of the Tenants' Union of New South Wales, echoed the call for national leadership, saying, quote, there is growing recognition that governments should be taking leadership to ensure renting provides safe, healthy and affordable homes. This now needs to be coupled with effective and evidence-based approaches to regulating the sector, end quote. With the rental crisis deepening, renter advocates say it's time to move beyond promises and deliver lasting nationwide reform. These have been the headlines for Monday, the 29th of September. You're listening to 3CR at 8:55 a.m.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings.
cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Throughout September, we're asking you to become a regular donor. By setting up an ongoing automatic monthly donation, you'll help provide a stable foundation for 3CR. If we know we can count on your donation every month, it means we can better plan and resource our broadcasting. Whether it's First Nations justice, workers' rights, climate action, independent music, housing advocacy, or disability activism, your regular support ensures that these movements and struggles have a platform every single week. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter. Food Not
Bombs. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM on the dial or via the Community Radio Plus app. First up, we're going to be hearing a segment of yesterday's Earth Matters show. We'll be hearing from Rosaline Parker, who is a Pacifica advocate and cultural consultant based in Sydney. Her work includes empowering young Pacific leaders engaging in meaningful advocacy, as well as climate justice initiatives in Tuvalu and Kiribati.
Aloha lava, everyone. My name is Rosaline, but everyone calls me Rose. I'm a proud Pacifica woman. My genealogy stretches across the vast Pacifica Moana, but I've mainly been brought up in the Samoan culture. Born in Tamaki Makaurau, Aotearoa, but very much raised in Western Sydney, very proud Western Sydney residents. So I guess I find that as someone that has a shared identity, I represent communities that are often overlooked, communities that are often spoken about, but never really spoken to or consulted with. So it's an honour to be here to share my perspective, firstly, as a Pacifica woman living within the diaspora. So, I mean, of course, Australia often paints themselves as, you know, the big brother to the Pacific region, right? And a lot of the actions and the decisions that are made here impact what happens across the Pacific, especially in the face of the climate crisis. So it's really important for me to share my concerns in order to protect the future of our Pacific Islands, as well as being a person that lives in the Western suburbs. I also see firsthand how rising temperatures and the cost of living are affecting our communities here. With the introduction of the different visa schemes, such as the Pacific Engagement Visa and Falipili Union Treaty, I can see many more of our Pacific Islanders coming over to live in communities such as Western Sydney, where we have the largest Pacifica population in New South Wales. So, you know, it's just It's really devastating to know that people will be moving from climate impacted communities to another climate impacted community as well. And that's why I'm here to share a perspective that reflects the realities of my community, both here and across the region as well. It's no secret that our Pacific Islands contribute very little to the climate crisis, but we are paying the highest price with interest, I would say. I mean, through my work, I work closely with communities in Tuvalu and Kiribati, our low-lying atoll nations in the Pacific. And similar to what Auntie mentioned before, right? If you have never seen that impact, if you're sitting comfortably within your home in the city, obviously it's very hard to have that connection and understanding. So I was in Kiribati just a couple of weeks ago, actually. And as soon as you get off the plane, you know, you see the impacts, you see the rising sea levels, you see families becoming displaced, not being able to live in their villages anymore. You know, I remember showering in brackish water. And for me, I was shocked. You know, this is the reality of these amazing, humble people. They never complain. They just keep going. And how unfair that is. I mean, you know, to contribute absolutely nothing to this, yet to be experiencing those impacts that impact on livelihoods, you know. I remember walking from one side of the island to the other. So when I walked through within the first hour, the ocean was at ankle height. And then I had to walk through again to get to the other side of the island an hour later. And it was literally waist high. It's crazy how fast the ocean rises, especially in Kiribati. They really like seafood, fish, you know, that's their main source of income, and also very yummy food that us island people love to eat. But of course, now, because of the impacts of climate change, you know, fishermen have to go further away. And, you know, they don't always come back, unfortunately. So I guess for me, the way that this makes our communities feel, and I know for me personally, you know, if you look at it in a day-to-day context, right, if someone steals from you, there's a consequence. If someone hurts you, there's a consequence. But I think with what we're experiencing with the fossil fuel projects, it's like, sorry to say this, but it's like dying a slow death, you know. The fact that governments and corporations don't take into consideration, you know, the lives of our people here in Australia and across the Pacific, and, you know, Indigenous communities across the world. And it's really psychologically distressing, because how come, you know, someone with money's existence is more important than ours? You know, when we have been looking after our lands and seas for thousands of years. When I talk about climate justice, especially our youth here in the diaspora, I generally just focus on three things, because I know that it's quite a big topic. But I guess firstly is recognition. So recognizing the importance of the connections that First Nations, Pacifica, and all Indigenous peoples across the planet have with land and sea, and also addressing the root causes of climate change, like understanding colonialism, systemic inequality, and extractive economies throughout history. There's been many times where I've gone to even grassroots events here in Sydney that are climate justice focused or Pacific climate change focused, and there's no Pacific people in the room at all. And it's like always a discussion about our people and how we can help the Pacific people, but not understanding the connections that we have within our own communities and in our own context, that we probably know what's best for our own communities. So that leads me to the second concept of consultation, you know, working collaboratively in a genuine way, you know, making sure that there's co-design, and especially you know, in terms of climate change policy. I know in some Pacific countries, a lot of it has been adopted from, you know, overseas consultants, very Eurocentric policies that do not reflect our communities and what our communities need. So it's really important to consult with Pacific and First Nations communities, especially in the lead up of this COP31 that I really hope is here in Australia. We have to make sure that it's really genuine and authentic. A lot of the time, you know, when the Pacific has hosted things in the past, of course, I know our people wanted the absolute best, but, you know, we get lost in the performative ways of culture, only wanting our communities to come to do a song and dance, but not really having us at the table. And I mean, having obviously the decision makers from the Pacific, but also the grassroots. Everyone here that's doing all this amazing work, we really need to be spearheading that COP31. So hopefully it is here. And also finally, I just wanted to touch on resourcing. It's really sad, especially for a lot of our more remote, and I'm speaking in the more Pacific context, but, you know, the remote communities, a lot of the time, you know, climate resilience efforts are driven by, you know, our church communities, our women. You know, these are not formally set up entities, and it's really sad that a lot of the climate finance, you know, it has to go through a tunnel. You know, there's so many stops as well because it's a very westernized system, westernized financial systems that do not work for our communities. So it's really important in order to achieve climate justice, you know, the resources need to be put in the hands of our communities. They shouldn't have to do a song and dance to access it. But yeah, I really wanted to share that because it's really sad. You know, it's easy to extract from our economies, but it's not hard to give back to those who are suffering from the actions of others. Sorry, guys, I just realized, like, we've been doing all this talking and crying and I didn't even share about the work that I do. So I'll just make it real quick. So I actually am the Project Partnerships and Community Engagement Officer at Edmund Rice Centre, based here in Sydney, working primarily on Pacific climate advocacy programs, and doing a whole heap of work as well in the local context around climate mobility as well. So I guess as part of my work, we have a partnership with the Tuvalu Climate Action Network and the Fusiolof Association, the only association for people living with a disability in Tuvalu. We are accepting donations for our beach cleaning activities. So just like environmentally friendly bags and gloves would be really helpful. But also we're on Facebook as well if you wanted to follow that journey. And I'd love to connect with you all for, sometime in the future. Thank you.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR at 8:55 a.m. That was Rosaline Parker. To support more of her work, search Tuvalu Climate Action Network on Facebook. And to hear the rest of the Earth Matters show, go to 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters or tune into 3CR on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. That was Birthday Slash Funeral by Daisy Picker. Next up, we're going to hear a speech from Julie Webb Pullman speaking at yesterday's Sunday Palestine rally. Julie Webb Pullman is a war crimes investigator and journalist who worked in Gaza from 2011 to 2020. Content warning for this next segment, rape, torture and murder are mentioned.
My greetings to the traditional owners of the land, whose always will be Aboriginal land. To all their leaders, past, present and emerging, stand strong. Kia kaha from New Zealand. I first went to Gaza in much the same manner as my daughter. I was with the Viva Palestina 5 convoy that drove ambulances from London to Gaza in 2010 following the Mavi Marmara attack in which 10 people were killed. There's never been real justice for those 10 dead people. Basically, the Turkish government was bought off. But on we go. I went back to Gaza after the convoy and ended up staying there, working first as a journalist and in 2014 with that massive two-month Israeli offensive, I became involved in collecting evidence of war crimes, as I had a history as an investigator before going back into journalism. In that time, I have worked with many teams in Gaza, training people on how to collect evidence, how to do bagging and tagging, establish a chain of custody, and we've together submitted over 3,000 victim complaints to the International Criminal Court. The work of many of these teams has, many of the people who did this work are now dead. Our offices have been destroyed several times. First in 2021, again in this latest offensive. They are trying to silence not only the voice of the people, but also the voice of the documents speaking for the people. The way in which journalists have been not only decimated in Gaza, but also not allowed in from international media so that nobody knows what's going on, is not working, because we can all see every second of every day what is going on in Gaza, and it is a genocide. The worst of it is just the number of children, the absolute attempt to remove not only the children of today, but the potential children of tomorrow. The use of prohibited weapons, depleted uranium, the effects on fertility, the effects on the environment are massive, and it's ecocide, it's ecology. It's destroying the environment, it's destroying the hunger, the famine has massive physical effects that will last in these children. Even if there is an end to the war, they will be compromised physically, psychologically for many, many decades. These are some of the more subtle effects that Israel is just completely ignoring, and so is the rest of the world, including our government. I'm not sure how many people are aware Royal Melbourne Hospital recently cancelled a seminar on the effects of war on children after lobbying by the usual suspects. They are trying, even in Australia, to silence what they are doing to the children of Gaza and the children of Palestine. And most shameful of that is that there are medical practitioners complicit in the silencing in the University of Melbourne, in the Royal Children's Hospital, in the Royal Melbourne Hospital. They know who they are, and we know who they are. I would remind them that since October 7th, at least 1,723 medical workers have been killed in Gaza alone. 38 hospitals either completely destroyed or bombed into unuse. These are all in clear contravention of the Geneva Conventions, that to which Australia and Israel are signatory. And those, nor if my daughter, as has been threatened to all the flotilla participants, is to be captured, kidnapped, and taken to Israeli prisons, she will not be the only medical worker to suffer that fate. Dr. Adnan Al-Borsh was brutally raped to death in Ofa prison after being seized from Al Auda Hospital in Gaza and illegally transferred across the border in April 2024. Physicians for Human Rights issued a report in February detailing the deaths of at least another three medical workers from Gaza, brutally tortured and murdered after their illegal detention and transfer to Israeli prisons. Dr. Iyad Al-Rantisi, Dr. Ziad Al-Dalu, and paramedic Hamdan Abu Anaba. There are still almost 200 Gazan health personnel, protected persons under the Geneva Conventions, detained in Israeli prisons. We have no indication of their fate because they do not let the International Red Cross into Israeli prisons. They do not let them visit prisoners of war. Even Hitler let the Red Cross into the concentration camps. We shouldn't need to remind the Australian government that transfer of protected persons from occupied territory to another territory is a war crime. Health workers in Gaza still continue to face constant threats on their lives. Another three hospitals in Gaza City, Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital, the Eye Hospital, and the Hamad Hospital, were all forced to close the last week because of the intensifying offensives. All the other health facilities left in Gaza City are either closed or closing as we speak. Is the Australian government going to step up as have Italy and Spain, and at least send accredited observers as the global summit flotilla has called for? They've got plenty of diplomats in the area. They've got them in Turkey. They've got them all over the place. They could be shared amongst the boats where the Australian participants on the flotilla are. They could accompany their citizens instead of just picking up the pieces afterwards. Why did my daughter go? Of course, because she is a healthcare worker with a conscience, with a heart, and with an absolutely unbreakable will. In the words of Zapata, the Mexican revolutionary, this is what she said to me in different words, but it encapsulates her entirely. I would rather die on my feet than live on my knees. She may die in a life jacket swimming rather than on her feet, but whatever, she is doing her utmost. to get justice for Palestine. To break the siege on Gaza. To establish a humanitarian corridor. As Che Guevara, it's relevant given the death yesterday of the revolutionary woman in Gaza, to mention what Che Guevara said. We are realists. We dream the impossible. To that, we could answer a Palestinian saying, we are realists. We achieve the impossible. Because no matter what the governments of the world may say, that they are doing this and that, they're recognizing the state of Palestine, that is all smoke and mirrors. The only real change is coming from the people. The governments did not lead the flotilla. The flotilla have led the governments.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Before that station ID, that was Julie Webb Pullman speaking at yesterday's Sunday Palestine rally. Up next, on Wednesday, the 3rd of September, the book Lionel Fogarty in Poetry and Politics was launched at the Melbourne School of Continental Philosophy in Brunswick. Earlier that day, Lionel joined Bunjalini Robbie Thorpe on 3CR's Bunjil Fire for chats about colonial laws and white supremacy education and his experience as a black poet, artist and activist. He finished up with a poem for Camp Sovereignty following the widely publicised racist attacks on the camp. Content warning, there's a brief mention of Aboriginal deaths in custody at hands of police in 1993.
As a part of their coat of arms, Britain.
Well, lucky they haven't got a kangaroo symbol.
Well, they got one. They've got one now.
Well, they got one here, you know, and we know that's illegal from some old man from South Australia, you know, and Kevin Buscott, he was saying that kangaroo and that emu, what they got up all over Australia at the Justice Department and that's quite illegal what they have done.
Yes, that's right, yes. So, well, tell us a bit more about your book. What is that?
I think this book here really got into the minds of professors who were teaching a lot of those colonialistic Banjo Patterson kind of styles of writing and Henry Lawson styles of writings and that. And they realised that there's a black guy with a black viewpoint of humanity, you might say, not just looking into what's black is black, and looking into the beyond it towards humanity and respecting people in equality in that way and having the same intellectual level where we don't all have to go to university. We can still respect our elders who taught us around campfires as the professors, as the ones that hold us real storylines and song lines and dance lines that have a real intellectual connection to the young people today, which would then guide them a very safe passage into the other big wheel that's out there, you know, for our people. And I think that these professors have looked at me in that way and created like compliments, you might say, and trying to understand me where I come from. You know, it's hard for them people, you know, to understand all of us black fellas where we come from. Yes. You know, even though they listen to us speaking, they read our books or they've seen us on TV or they've seen us in demonstrations or on films and that, they still can't understand us, you know. They subby, subby little tiny bit. And so with that little bit of understanding, they write a bit about it and they give compliments towards us. And I think this is what's happened with this book. I haven't even seen the book myself, you know. Then he got me down. And they haven't sent me a copy.
Yeah. Wow.
So I got none to give you, brother.
you give us heaps, brothers. We didn't need... I should say, we didn't need to chop him down until you make him paper or make him message, you know. We kept it in our head, and it was in us. It was embedded in us.
So I'm still using English as a tool, you know, but I'm working with one bloke named Dub Wise. He's a Jamaican guy putting reggae to the music, and I'm working with another Australian guy named Alex Venter. He's sitting in here today, and he does space kind of music, you know, and putting into my a small little what am I, and a tendency to the kangaroo or something like that. You know, it's the way I operate it now is that if you blend it in with music, because music sees no languages, you know, and it divides nobody. It makes everyone have the rhythm of the art.
Yeah, no, it's a universal language, isn't it? The music, yeah. Just getting back to what you were talking about before, you know, white fella doesn't hear us, right? He can see us. He doesn't really hear us. He might listen, but he doesn't hear us, or the other way around. And, you know, that's what the problem's been in this country. It's like a... they're dismissing who we are. We're not really fully human, and you know, this Aborigine guy, he's actually educated. You know, like, you know, they're amazed that an Aboriginal person can be an educated person. That's what it comes across as.
I mean, if it takes a peaceful camp and a peaceful a fight of conversation with people to bring out what is hatred out there and what is developing hatred. You know, that peace must be a powerful peace. It must come from some of our people with cultural upbringing and have that culture in their discussion and conversation with this hate that's coming up to try and stop it. Because that's mostly what we want to do. We don't want to reinforce hate. No way. No. You know?
No, we're very open down at Camp Sorrento. Like, what we're on about is about peace, healing, love, harmony, justice for everybody.
Yeah, but these things like this, racism, wherever it is, even if it's an ignorant little kid, an intolerant little kid, they should be deported. They should be taken out of the country, away from here. You know, like one professor said, "Are you stupid, Lionel, for thinking that you can ship everyone out of Australia?" I'm not saying that. We should get rid of all the bad ones that's coming up and influencing the cooperation between human beings, you might say, or people, you know. The humiliation one got to go, you know.
That's a good point. It's not everyone we're talking about, is it?
It's a structure, brother.
It is. And it makes me think about, you know, where's the human rights laws in this country? There's no such thing. There's no human rights legislation. There are only charters which you can, you know, you can decide whether you want to take that on or not. But there's no enforceable human rights laws in this country. There's no Bill of Rights.
Well, you know, I heard Amnesty. I went to the Parliament House in Brisbane, and Amnesty was giving a speech about human rights on how they're doing work in the remote and everything like that. Then I got up and I said, "Well, what did you ever achieve for us in human rights? Have you changed this legislation in Australia, the discriminative legislation that doesn't really respect our humanity in Australia?" You know, and I challenge that by saying that it's like the Royal Commission into Deaths in Custody, you know, the 339 recommendations. I mean, I got that when they done that to my baby brother, killed him, you know, police officers in 93, and flamed it up and chucked it in the building. it was all over the media. I mean, that's how we have to try and do. We have to do actions like that to try and proceed to get our human rights recognised. You know, I mean, I like the way Anise there, Lydia Thorpe, approached the matter. You know, she goes within the Westminster system and exposes them, but with our real true meaning nationally in Australia. You know, it's just not locally she speaks. She speaks about national things and she touches everyone. I mean, I'm coming across my granddaughters and that who are just growing up and saying, I admire that woman, you know, for speaking out for us.
Yeah, no, she's very strong, Lydia. And that's what we needed to do, to get inside that system there, you know, in that position and let them know. And I think they, you know, that shocked them. They didn't expect that to come. But that was always going to come from Lydia, if it was anybody. She's always been strong like that. And
yeah, the others was always coconuts, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And they still are today.
Yes, they are.
No?
Yeah. That's sadly true. Mm. But you know, I'm going to take it one step further. That's why we really want to get to the International Criminal Court, for whatever that's worth, to expose Australia for what it is. You know, it's I call it an institution of racism.
It's like the native title, brother. You know, that gave us naive titties, you know, and we're sucking the wrong milk out of that. And it's going nowhere for us, but it's still there, right? And we use it to try and get cultural heritage rights for our young people to go out and have a look out on land, pick up artifacts and that before they build a Catholic church and things like that. And we're not getting nowhere there. There's no housing that's being developed for our people, where we don't pay the rent, right? We're paying the rent just like other white people in Australia, and we shouldn't be doing that. It's our custodian rights to get reparation, and I believe that when they shifted my people away from Mulinjali country out in Bowdoin, up to Sherbeek, Woorabinda, Palm Island, and places like that, they removal people of removal land. Lost a lot of land, and they belong to the land because they removal people from land. And they're not being taught that, right? They've been confused and divided and, you know, trying to make them like little coconut white people now at the moment, you know? And I think that with my people who are removal land people, they deserve reparation,
absolutely.
Compensation.
Absolutely. That's what our struggle is for our land rights. You know, that was at our struggle. We weren't struggling for naive title. You know, we were fighting, and white man got no right to make laws for us. You know, we already got a law here, and this is our land, and we got customary law. When the white man came here, he brought his own law here and didn't bother acknowledging our law. There was no consent.
We don't have to show them through paper in our law. We got the dance, we got the song. We got the storylines in it. That's the law, man.
That's a proper, you know? Law. That's a proper law. And that's a law that's been here for at least
And you don't have to be in the outback. You can be still living in your country in the city.
That's right.
What I always say.
Yeah, you're right. Mm. You've been one of the most staunchest activists. And you've done it in a way where you got something to show for it, like your poetry, your books. How many books you got up there now?
I've got about 10 books, but I think that I'm trying to create music with the poetry, which will help guide people. And also I'm doing a lot of painting too. I'm opening up a gallery down in Sydney next week sometime.
Oh, wow.
It's like I'm doing lots of little small paintings and large paintings on canvases too. I'm painting my poetry, which makes it original.
Painting your poetry, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds
on funny. Large canvases as well. Like one of our paintings, about four of them are sold at the Spring Wheel Fair Arts Fair in Melbourne just recently.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm doing painting too.
Wow, you got it all covered, bros. Yeah. Hey. Thanks for joining us today, Lionel. Anything else you might want to add?
Oh, true.
So that's going to break up all these communities. I actually live in one of the towers down in Richmond, and it's going to, you know, dislocate all these people, dispossess them. And
homeless are everywhere, brother. Even when you got a place, and then you're sitting there like a homeless person, and then they come along and they really want to redevelop it. That's quite terrible, you know.
It is.
I'm on your side there.
Yeah.
And it's been a pleasure to come here and even hear you speaking to and to see you.
Yeah.
You know, and,
still alive.
You're still alive and you're still strong.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, I'm going okay.
You're pumping it out for us all, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to keep going.
You're pumping the truth out for us, brother.
Yeah, so are you, Buzz. So are you, Buzz. And that's what it's all about, yeah.
No.
So, and we're going to get a poem from Lionel before he leaves the studio. Is that right, Lionel?
Yeah, this is for Camp Sovereign.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
339, continue to rise. Next year, all this debt's variety causes stopped. Next year, all this cell-sleeping crybabies stopped. Next year, all in and out jailbirds stopped. Next year, all fierce nations stopped the rats. Next year, all royal commissioners got sacked. Next year, all dark folks whom voted for Westminster systems got sacked. Customary, without being in custody, killed and still killers. Black matters and dreams as well. Relet life must be stopped. Next year, people live not in tease. Injustice a thing of the past down story. Next year, dates changed. 1,000,000,000 avoided injustice. Bad season. Next year, new representation. Finally take a good look at yourself.
Wow, that's Lionel Fogarty.
No way.
Yeah, thanks, Lionel. Thanks, Heath, man. And I'll catch up to you shortly. All right, mate.
No.
Okay.
Your way.
All right, we've got a coming up to 11:30. You listen to Bungellini and my brother, Lionel Fogarty. We go right back, man, Lionel.
Your way.
We're right back to Musgrave Park there in Brisbane, Meanjin.
Yeah, your way.
Them good old days, bros. And
Artie Publishing days.
Too deadly, mate.
Yeah.
All right. Love you, man.
Your way.
Your way.
Want to open the door to opportunities? Discover Learn Local, right in the heart of your community. Build confidence in reading and writing. Gain work and life skills while supporting family. Learn Local, a wide range of low-cost courses at over 200 locations across Victoria. Your goals, your way. Visit vic.gov.au/learnlocal-First Nations to start exploring now. Authorised by the Victorian Government, Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
We were just listening to Lionel Fogarty speaking on Robbie Thorpe's show, Bunjil's Fire, here at 3CR. To listen to more of Robbie's show, go to 3cr.org.au/firefirst or tune in at 3CR on Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
The beat never goes. The streets never goes. Middle East.
wasn't taken to a land, but my land was taken. Maybe native, let me erase it, unsacred to dance naked, asking where the rain is.
Maybe, maybe, maybe I am nameless, faceless, even better, raceless. Maybe, maybe, maybe fishery ain't nothing but a steep thing, baby. So you down, down, down with it.
As for Palestinian, we're pronouncing it.
So you down, down, down with it. From the tunnels of Gaza, what's more on the ground than this?
Common Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Before those CSAs, we were just listening to the track called The Beat Never Goes Off by Tamer Nafar. Next up, we're going to be hearing Mercedes from A Friday Rave speaking on the age restriction laws coming in December, the legal framework to ban social media from under 16-year-olds, and the dangers of third-party verifications.
We're going to kick off this week. There's a few things.
Hi, I'm Cam Smith from Yanar Pasaran.
I'm Andy Fleming.
Andy, quick question. The commercial media, that provides a voice to marginalised communities, doesn't it? And as governments around the world take a turn to the far right, it provides a critical anti-fascist analysis?
Cam, how many times do I have to tell you this? No, that's not the case.
Ah, that's not good. So who is doing all that?
Cam, community media, including 3CR, Melbourne's community radio.
And how can we support 3CR in doing that?
We can subscribe, Cam, at any time.
By visiting 3cr.org.au or calling the station on 9419 8377. Subscribe to 3CR.
And stay anti-fascist.
Sorry about that small technical difficulty. We will be listening to Mercedes' segment in a little bit once I get it up. But now we're going to be hearing another speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally. We'll be hearing from Renata, a progressive unionist who has worked in occupational health and safety for over 30 years. She has family ties in Palestine and speaks on the historic struggle unfolding in Italy and their protests for Palestine.
Thank you. Okay, on behalf of Philip, Naam, I acknowledge that we are meeting on the stolen land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation that was never ceded, and pay my respects to the elders past and present. We stand in staunch solidarity with First Nations people and recognise that our struggles are linked. We also extend our solidarity to the 15 comrades arrested in Bologna and Milan this week. Resistance is not a crime. Many Italians here, our grandparents joined the resistance and fought for the freedom and the dignity of their people. In recognition of their fight against the Nazi fascist occupation, many cities in Italy were awarded what's called a gold medal for the resistance, and Genova is one of those cities. For us, these medals are a reminder of our civil duty to stand up for anyone whose freedom is under threat. The dock workers in Genova have been blocking ships carrying arms for several years, well before the start of the current genocide. But a few weeks ago, they made a promise. They said that the Gaza siege must be broken. As the Italian boats were leaving to join the Sumud flotilla, they also promised that if the boats were attacked, they would call a general strike and block not only the ports, but the country. Just days later, two boats stationed in Tunis were attacked by drones. The Confederation of the Rank and File Grassroots Union Movement, USB, called a general strike for Palestine. So this Monday, September 22nd, hundreds of thousands of workers downed tools and protested in the streets. There were over 200,000 people in Rome, over 50,000 in Milan, over 20,000 in Bologna, Torino and Naples. Tens of thousands more rallied in over 80 cities and small countries, small villages across the country. This wasn't only a demonstration of solidarity with Palestine. They blocked four commercial ports, Genova, Livorno, Trieste, and Civitavecchia. And ports on Italy's east side also shut down in solidarity. They closed three central highways. They closed down universities. Students closed down high schools. 80% of public transport was closed. Infrastructure shut down for the whole day. The success of the general strike showed that organising in a broad way, using a diversity of tactics, approaches and strategies, using social media, community radio stations and building support led to an amazing outcome. To those on the outside, it may seem like the call was spontaneous, but in fact, it was over 2 years in preparation. Building a broad network of communication and mutual respect for everyone working in their respective communities. Educating, informing, so that once a national or regional call is made, many people are prepared. So that call was made for September 22nd. And together, workers and students, even priests I heard, shut down the country. All with one message. Blocchiamo tutto. Restiamo umani. We block everything, we'll remain human. They showed that the time of compromises and warm statements is long gone, that people stand with solidarity, not propaganda. They showed the fascist government of Italy, the third biggest seller of weapons to Israel, that no matter how many anti-protest laws they adopt, the people will keep standing up. The numbers were so great that any attempt to repress or to twist the narrative has been unsuccessful. Within 24 hours, the government dispatched two military ships to accompany the flotilla, at least while they're in international waters, and stated that while it still believes that Hamas started the war, Israel has gone too far and breached humanitarian norms, causing a massacre of civilians. So this, in 24 hours, the Italian government was afraid. If there is one thing to take away from Monday, it's that it showed that it is possible for those without any real power to block a country. It is possible and necessary to stand all together and block genocide. A second general strike has been called for the 3rd of October and a national rally in Rome the day after. Workers, students and citizens in Livorno declared the city a no-weapons zone and are permanently blocking the docks. Delegations of dock workers from different countries in the Mediterranean are meeting in Genova now to coordinate an international strike against the weapons trade. Under the general strike, workers and students will carry on with local strikes, blockades, rallies and disruptions. Can we do the same here? Maybe not quite the same, because the history of unions and strikes, how the union movement can mobilise in Italy, and the conditions and laws are different to what we have in Australia. We have a completely different set of circumstances. Our society is different, and our geographical location on the other side of the world all mean that the tools that we have are different, and so the actions we take must be different. But the leaders of the movement in Italy have made it clear to the many thousands who turned out, one day is not enough. We must keep up the pressure. And the only way to do this is to boycott, divest, and sanction. This must be the way to keep pressure on the Israeli state. This is what we need to do in Australia. This is what our unions need to get behind, and our governments. The commitment to human rights cannot be an afterthought. It is a daily practice, a practice of every breath. It is believing in a shared humanity and fighting for its dignity. Italy proved to us Italians, and indeed to the world, that we want liberation, that the occupation extends into our lives, and that we are all connected beyond the Mediterranean and across the world. The same government that allows the incarceration of First Nations children, the demolition of public housing, and the illegal administration of a democratically elected union is the same one that lies about exporting weapons to Israel and sells out stolen land to prepare for a US war against China. This is truly a time of monsters, and we must fight for a world that struggles to be born out of the dying. The work we do will decide what kind of world it will be. Block everything, stay human, until victory, until liberation. Long live Palestine. Long live the resistance. Palestina libera dal fiume fino al mare.
Your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be!
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire. Jesus, that burning school fire.
love. I started putting myself first. I learned to love from within, and even in my darkest times I don't let the dark in. You can't manipulate my mind because I got this thick skin. And if you're wondering why I'm strong, I got all that from my kin. Make something out of nothing, turn water to wine, then turn wine back into water, cause without it I'm fine. Don't leave that poison for my spirit, it's not attacking my mind, because I'm stronger than the colony, I'm living my life. So you can keep your negativity away from me. I'm just me, doing me and what I'm meant to be. Being free in who I am and for my babies, and I don't have to count on anybody else to save me. I done this on my own too, I got shit to lose. So best believe I pick my battles, how I make my moves. And everybody talking when I mess up, now I see the truth. So you can keep that fake shit over there with all them other fools.
Gotta keep moving, healing in the music, feeling in my soul.
I'm on a different level to the one when I was useless. I'm picking up the pieces now, I ain't making excuses. Manifested dreams into fruition, I'm a cool bitch. Cooler than the typical, but I like it on my own now. Never like material, but got myself a god mouth. Not the ones in jewelers, now this one here is ancestral. But I am not your idol, please don't put me on that pedestal. See, you just see yourself in me, parts of you and mirror back. But everything inside you is a testament to being black. That's the reason everything I say is hitting you like that. What? Everything I say caused an impact, and I ain't even half of me. I'm just getting started here. I dip my pinky finger in and knew I'd be a shark in here. Best believe before I go, I'll leave my damn mark in here. I ain't going out quiet now, I'm speaking from the heart this year.
They would never bring us down, cause we turned it all around, and we're stronger than ever. Change for the better. We making moves in the plain sight, and that's fruition for my new life. We making change out our old stripes. Switch up the position from the vision that we all got. Stronger than you know.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
That track was Fruition by Barker. Now we're going to be listening to Mercedes from A Friday Rave, speaking on the age restriction laws coming in December. Legal framework to ban social media from under 16-year-olds and the dangers of third-party verification. To hear the rest of this episode and more, go to 3cr.org.au/Friday Rave or tune in to 3CR on Fridays from 5 to 5:30.
3CR.
We're going to kick off this week. There's a few things we've had to narrow it down. But this week, so I'm sure we've spoken about it on the show before, but the new age restriction guideline or laws that are coming in, the actual bill escapes me at the moment, but that's coming in this year in December, and it's basically a regulatory framework and, sorry, a legal framework rather, to ban social media from major providers like Google, Meta, TikTok, and the YouTube and the like for persons under 16. And so just this week, the eSafety Commissioner released the social media minimum age regulatory guidance. Yeah, so I was having a read through of this, and it sort of sets out the it's a guidelines or ways in which they're able to, well, they're not really, these laws aren't really enforceable. There is a fine, but of how these providers, like these the biggest tech companies in the world, how they should go about age verification and the processes that they look at. And they don't say that necessarily any one is better than the other. Of course, there's you know, there's data privacy laws in Australia, and so the big yeah. part of that is the government is trying to say, in order to for these companies not to breach data privacy laws, fat chance, is that, you know, to go through these different processes of guidelines. And so there's a few. One of those is government identification. One of those is, like what I'm going to have a little chat about now, is the use of third-party vendors in this. And so I think there's a lot in there that is important, but I think the use of the third-party vendors is what was the thing that stuck out to me in the first reading. And so the report yeah. says, this is a quote, "A provider of an age-restricted social media platform may rely on a contracted third-party vendor as an alternative. Providers may also consider other age signals or information, such as from other services in the technology stack or across the digital ecosystem. Regardless of whether age assurance is in-house or third-party, and where age assurance occurs in the technology stack, digital ecosystem, or user journey, the obligation to take reasonable steps is on the provider of the age-restricted social media platform. Providers should consider the availability of independent accreditation and/or evaluation and the potential exacerbation of scam risks for end users." So basically, the government is saying in these guidelines, Google, Meta, or Alphabet, Meta, which controls Instagram, Facebook, there's TikTok, YouTube, all of these companies, it's up to them basically to ensure and verify these third parties. But what seems to be missing is that data is a massive economic resource, and it's not just for intelligence surveillance, but also like selling user data for targeted ads. Every time you click something on Instagram, but then that data gets sold, creates maps of why you get targeted ads. And so there's what is going to emerge out of this, and what is already emerging, but a new markets in independent, quote unquote, third-party age verification that will assure user accounts aren't deactivated are going to emerge. And they're going to, because they don't have the legal framework or the potential of the fine, there's going to be less safeguards on the data retention and the supposed scrutiny that the major providers are going to be under as a part of the bill, which is still nothing. You know, I'll talk about that in a little while. So these companies, these third-party vendors, are able to bypass Australian data privacy laws and sell that data to the major providers. The large tech companies can avoid any legal scrutiny and possible fines by going, oh, we got the data from this third-party service. And so because the third-party data stores are a profit-driven enterprise, they're not going to have user security as their priority. There's an increased risk of breaches. They can just have a company that folds and then opens up somewhere else. And when the big tech providers fail to adhere, they'll cop a slap on the wrist for the breaches, and it'll just become more viable to outsource age verification. And so how we see this, and a big part of what the these guidelines, you know, we've spoken about in the show before, about these sweeping measures that will require everybody to provide their information and their data in order to determine age verification. But I think there's also another element to that in terms of these third-party vendors, you know, in terms of campaigns, and to assure your account remains active, upload all of your details here, give us all of your details. And, you know, you can imagine how many people are going to fall into that. And so this bill is going to be creating new markets And it already is. And so the third party verification and the adherence to those data privacy laws is up to the famously trustworthy companies like Meta and Google. Google, remembering, is a company that in 2015, they removed the term "don't be evil" from their code of conduct.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, it's okay. Most companies don't have "don't be evil" in their code of conduct. But if you do have it and you're removing, it's basically giving people carte blanche to be evil.
Yeah. Well, they say that Alphabet kind of said, you know, it was in preference to Alphabet's code of conduct that said do the right thing. But so another major point out of this is the algorithmic bias. And so the tests for the age verification that formulated the basis for this for these regulatory guidelines were done by an independent UK based mob, AASC. I can't remember the exact acronym, but the Guardian released an article about it today from Digital Rights Watch with that name in it. So the test for age verification in these tests highlighted that there's racial bias specifically for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and South Asian people within the tests that they conducted and the age verification tests. And so with speaking of the almost definite use of third-party identification platforms for the social media age ban, they'll be collecting data on underage users to verify their accounts and on minors. And so AI and machine learning platforms like Microsoft Insights or Cognitech Systems may be ones that are already in use. And so Microsoft Insights works not on facial recognition, but on voice location and behavioral analysis, which is one of the guidelines of that it's being used in terms of AI and machine learning to determine age, whereas Cognitech Systems is facial recognition technology. So earlier this year, New South Wales Police have been found to be using this what this regulatory guidelines calls a waterfall analysis for predictive policing. And
can you just say that phrase again?
The New South Wales Police earlier this year have been found to be using Microsoft Insights voice location and behavioural analysis AI technology and Cognitech Systems facial recognition technology for predictive policing.
Right. Okay.
There was an inquiry and that was done in February of this year, and so New South Wales Police has been using this predictive policing methods for a long time. Predictive policing has been underpinning, but they're using this facial recognition technology, and what's come out of the use of these particular systems, and in particular Cognitech Systems, is intense racial prejudice towards First Nations and West African people.
Right.
At a difference of, I think, 100 to 10, 10, a 90% variable. So
right.
That in and of itself, yeah.
So just on that, it's bad enough. Of course, I'm not minimising that it's that people because of their ethnicity, different facial features, will be less likely to be aged appropriately, or whatever. It's not just race; it's class as well. Mm. Because I remember my own lad using the VPN to play video games as if he was based in the United States.
Mm.
All right. Now, any 15-year-old kid from a relatively middle-class home in Australia is going to be able to log into their VPN and pretend they're in a country where they haven't got those same restrictions. But it's going to be the poor people who access the computer at libraries and who access the computer at school and various other homework groups, for example, who are going to be caught up in this. It's not only race targeted; it's class targeted.
Mm. And the use of tools in their own tests that they've put this regulatory frameworks and tried to obfuscate the racial bias or the biases within their own tests of the analysis that they've already done, and yet are pushing ahead with it, and so. I guess when, you know, that these same platforms, Microsoft being a massive company, Cognitech Systems obviously already having whatever they need to be used within law enforcement, these are the same platforms that have verification tools that are going to use those same data sets that are made available to the other service. So how am I trying to frame this? These same companies being employed as or contracted as third-party vendors for this specific age verification tools and analysis as a requirement of this bill increases the data sets that will then be made available to other services like Google and Meta and AI and to other law enforcement. And so the result will be increased data sets of more information that is then becoming and being made available to law enforcement in already over-policed communities and feeding into those predictive models of policing. So in claiming to protect young people, the Australian government legislation is opening up more young people to targeting because of the increase of data sets, because of this third-party vendor system, which is legislated as a part of this bill. Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess there's a lot in this bill, and Digital Rights Watch have put in submissions, but also, you know, in terms of what this means, you know, for young people, it's not going to do anything for the tech companies. This is kind of more just like an annoying blowfly in the window that just arcs up every now and again, but not worth getting up out of your seat off, you know.
Yeah.
The $49 million fine works out to about 0.049 of Alphabet's profits from last year. That's if there's even...
Even if it is
enforceable. So it's just collecting more data and creating a new market and helping the models and the machine learning and AI models to develop their technology further, because that's the way that this technology generates.
And that brings us to the end of our show. You've been listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR at 8:55 a.m. That was just Mercedes from A Friday Rave speaking about age restriction laws on social media. Before that, we heard Renata from yesterday's Free Palestine rally. And before that, we heard Lionel Fogarty, an Aboriginal poet and activist based in Mianjin. At the start of the show, we heard Webb Pullman on yesterday's Sunday rally, who is a war crimes investigator and journalist who worked in Gaza from 2011 and 2020. And the first thing we heard on the show was Rosaline Parker from Earth, from the show Earth, speaking on the show Earth Matters, speaking about empowering young Pacific leaders in engaging in meaningful advocacy. This has been the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR, and stay tuned for Women on the Line.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.